service. Welcome to Narkees this June 25th Bible study. We are continuing in our investigation of the triennial parasha cycle according to our Charles Perrow book. And I've written the references up on the board, Genesis 39, 7 through 23, and the parallel Haftarah, 1 Samuel 2, 22 to 30, and verse 35. And I'm not sure how that works, why certain chunks are missing. So I just read through to 35.
Amen.
But we'll see. So let's open with a word of prayer, and then we can go around and everyone say their names so we all know who we are. Lord, thank you so much for Shabbat, for bringing us here. Thank you for your Bible, and that there's so much we can learn from it, even after studying a long time. And I pray that you would show each of us something new today, and that you would be real in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. So let's go, we can read it together. First, let's just say our names for some people who don't know each other. Start with you.
Hannah.
Yeah.
Sharon. Okay, so we'll try to remember all of that. And there's a no-name over there that's squeaking. We're trying to rescue a kitten. One of very many in the streets of Jerusalem. So, Genesis 39, 7. Gemma, why don't you start reading for us? Take about 3 verses or so.
And after a while, his master took notice of Joseph and said, After a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with everything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one's greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. You carry on.
Okay. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice, and it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home.
Carry on.
And she said to him as follows, the Hebrew servant came to me, whom you brought to us to make fun of. And so I lifted up my voice and called, he left his garment with me and fled outside. And when his master heard the words of his wife, she
paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the law was with Joseph and gave them success in whatever he did.
Great. So that's our Joseph Potiphar story. We're going to jump also to 1 Samuel. It's a small section of verses. Chapter 2, verses 22 to 30. Maybe, Winky, you can keep reading. It starts with Eli being very old. Okay, so in the big picture, we have a parallel or contrast with Joseph and Eli's sons. So let's start putting up some links. Maybe we can go in the verse order that we have. I guess we'll start with Genesis verse order. We could also talk mention just quickly the themes. Once again, you have Joseph in a piece of clothing, right?
Yes.
This is the second time.
Amazing.
And once again, it's a false report about him,
yeah,
related to piece of clothing. If you looked earlier from our parasha in verse 18, it also mentions that Samuel wears a piece of clothing, which is a ephod, which is what the priests wear. And I think it also says ephod, but
I thought they set up, you know, somebody set up, you know, it was a worship or something, and I somehow thought it was some piece of metal. It's clothing.
Ephod is clothing. Well, it has the choshen on it.
Yeah, it has the breastplate.
Where the priests, at least according to Leviticus, where the different stones for the tribes of Israel are, and the Urim and Tumim stay. And actually, let's just look at those verses quickly, because because that might play into something. Let's see. Let's look at Exodus 28:29-30.
Say it again, Exodus.
Exodus 28. Aaron will bear the names of the sons of Israel in the breastpiece of decision over his heart when he goes into the holy place for a memorial before the Lord continually. Okay, so V'nasa Aaron et shmot bnei Israel v'choshen ha-mishpat. So that's your choshen is the breastpiece, ha-mishpat, of justice or of decision on his heart.
But when it doesn't call it an ephod there, does it?
You're right. That's the choshen specifically, which you can assume to be on the ephod. V'natata el choshen ha-mishpat et ha-urim ve'et ha-tumim ve'hayu al lev Aaron bevo lifnei Adonai v'nasa Aaron et mishpat bnei Israel al libo lifnei Adonai tamid. So that's this idea that the choshen bears a sense of justice or judgment or decisions for the people, and I guess referring to the Urim and Tumim. But if you want to look at it more abstractly, like the responsibility or the priest representing the people and the judgments over them, which of course he also has names on the forehead and all that. So for the Ephod specifically, let's see if I have. Okay, so in Exodus 25, you have the stones set in the ephod. So in also in chapter 28:4, these are the garments that they are to make: a breastpiece, which is the choshen, an ephod, umeil, uktonet, teshabetz. Mitznefet ve'avnet. Okay, so the net has breastpiece, ephod, a robe, a fitted tunic, a turban, and a sash.
Must wear a ton, you know.
And they're holy garments. Okay, so also Samuel wears an ephod, and it mentions a coat that his mom makes him every year or every so often when she comes to Shiloh.
And also for verse 6:28:6, Sheila.
Well, it says in this verse that he wears an ephod, and then
28:6 says, make the ephod of gold and blue, purple and scarlet yarn,
right.
Finely twisted linen, the work of skilled hands. So it's not metal, it's definitely a garment.
Yes,
and
but the stones are.
Yeah.
Put in, just like your shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, I'm wearing an ephod. How's that? Or a choshen. And yours too, come to that. And yours a bit little.
Wait, what am I doing? My... Okay, the boy in 1 Samuel 2:18, it mentions that Samuel ministered before the Lord. The boy was dressed in a linen ephod. Na'a hagur ephod bad. And then after that, it talks about how now his mom used to make him a little jacket or a little me'il, the robe.
Where do you know?
In verse 19. His mother used to make him a small robe and bring it up to him at regular intervals when she would go up with her husband to make the annual sacrifice.
Oh, back in Samuel, right?
Yeah. So it mentions two of the garments he's wearing. One, I guess, signifies he's a priest. He's adopted in.
Who?
Shmuel, Samuel.
This is your mother, his mother, Rebecca.
Right. And the fact that you have that natural connection just thematically, that Joseph used to get a continual coat made for him, and that case or play a part in the story. Especially in this story, it's mentioned, it's a key piece of evidence. I don't know in this story if you can see it as clearly. Maybe someone has ideas about why it's mentioned.
And who does Joseph marry?
Who does Joseph marry? Osnat, the priest's daughter? So you're saying Joseph is a priest?
I was thinking more of the...
Of the
prostitute story a couple of weeks ago. Who is it? Tamar?
That also has Hakel
now. This whole thing about
the coat.
The ownership, the possession, who a person is according to their clothing, for good or for bad.
So maybe we jumped ahead a little too much. Let's keep this in our mind, the overall themes of clothing and identification. If you go back to Genesis 39, let's see, am I in Genesis 39? What popped up to me at first is both these stories involve hearing. Okay, so first Yosef is put in place. Notice also in this story, even though the previous parasha we had Potiphar's name. This might be your first Bible study back, so. So we know Potiphar. We know his name, but here in our story, it's not used. It's always used Adonav, his master. And so, I don't know what you want to make of that, but I make of that we're seeing Joseph as a slave. And we're always reminded of his position in relation to his master. Of course, he is the head slave of the household, which is a high position, but he's still accountable to his master. And that's what he tells Potiphar's wife. Okay, so...
go back to hearing, because that's really important.
Okay, so the hearing part I was thinking of is after she first makes her first advance, he says, he refuses, and he says, you know, my master's given me everything except for you, and so how could I sin against him and against God? And how could I do this big bad, this big evil? Hara'ah ha'gdola hazot v'chatati l'Elohim, and I would sin against God. And then it makes, in verse 10, it talks about how she would speak to him daily. There's where the hearing comes in. So she's talking to him daily, and he doesn't listen to her. So every day he's hearing her, and he's not listening to her. He's not doing what she's asking. And then one day we have a particular incident when no one else is in the house, and that's when she grabs his clothes. So here he's being good by hearing a continual daily something, words, and not listening. Here, who's listening or not listening? How did this start out?
Eli not wanting to listen to the reports of his sons.
Right. Eli is listening. Well, he's hearing a report. He's hearing a report.
The report of his sons is contrary to what Joseph reported. They're going to be opposite.
Hearing, not hearing is more of an artistic connection, but Eli's sons, when he challenges them, he also says, don't do this, the things you're doing are bad, right? So we have bad or evil things. Here we have one evil thing. And after they don't listen. So he hears about evil things and the sons don't listen to their discredit. Joseph doesn't hear, calls it an evil thing, and doesn't listen to his credit. So it's kind of opposite things going on. So they don't listen back.
Is it not hearing? I mean, give Joseph a break. It's not that he's not hearing, he's not responding. And this yom-yom thing, it's like...
I'm talking about shama, which is both. This is what we hear and obey, right? It's
right.
The same.
Sure.
So so to hear in this context is not just I hear it, it's I'm obeying it. When it says velo shama, they didn't obey. They did not change after the dad talked to them. So I don't know what doesn't listen or doesn't obey. I'll just add that. And that's good in Joseph's case.
I was wondering about this phrase, yom yom.
Yom yom is everything.
I mean, we say, I mean, it sounds like day after day after day. Is it linked to these women who nag in Proverbs? Is it the same phrase?
I don't know.
You know, a woman is, what is it? A nagging woman is like a dripping tap or something.
I mean, you could say thematically. I don't think it's the same phrase used in that verse. But if you want Proverbs, here's a proverb for you. Proverbs 3:4. Find chen. Find favor. And good judgment or good understanding in the eyes of God and man. Proverbs 3:4. What do you guys have for that?
I hope then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. This is NIV.
Okay, so favor, and what was your second name?
Good name.
Good name.
High esteem.
High esteem.
Good understanding.
Good understanding.
Approbation. I don't know the word.
Approbation?
It says, and you'll find favor and approbation in the eyes of God.
Yeah, approbation doesn't mean much to me. So
I guess so.
Okay, so this is what the wise person is told to do. And look back at the Joseph passage. God gave Joseph favor, the same word chen. Or he gave both chesed and chen. Chesed is your faithful love, covenantal love.
What verse?
Sorry, Genesis 39. What verse?
Four.
39:4. Yes.
So
that's from last week. Yeah, we're carrying it in to our understanding. God gave Joseph favor in his master's eyes, and he served him. And so he got put in charge of everything. Oh, but then later on, that's what I'm looking at. In our parasha, when he gets thrown into jail, the same thing happens,
yes,
right? So what verse is that? Hi, welcome.
21.
There you go.
The Lord was with him, he showed him kindness and granted him favor.
So he outstretches him chesed, and then he gives his favor in the eyes of the prison guard. So it doesn't just say that the prison guard likes him. That's a normal thing.
What verse is that?
Verse 21. It says, and God gave him favor in the prison guard's eyes. And so the prison guard sets him above the other prisoners. And it has a very interesting sentence there. Everything they were doing, he was doing. So I guess everything going on, he was the one in charge. Okay, and then then the prison guard, of course, sees that God is with him and everything he does succeeds. So you kind of have a picture of somebody who has this going on very strongly. If you're going to take this Sehen Tov as high esteem or good understanding or a good name, in prison at least, Yosef has it. Here, it's like a sandwich. At the beginning, he had it, and he has it in prison. And then in the middle, he has a bad name sent out about him from deceptively from Potiphar's wife. So here, the report that Eli hears is actually true, and it's a bad report. Another link between the two is, what does Potiphar say? Potiphar's wife say in this.
He wanted to sleep with me.
She says, sleep with me, right?
He won't.
She says, sleep with me.
Oh, I'm sure.
Command, sleep with me, right? So here, what is the sin of the kids, the Eli's sons?
They do sleep.
They sleep with the Tzovot. Whatever they're doing, whoever they are, they're women who somehow work in the tabernacle. And they're not to be slept with, but the sons of Eli are sleeping with them. What else are they doing wrong? They're evil things, right? What else? We remember from the previous time, you can just say it from memory, about the sacrifices. They wanted the raw meat. They wanted the best parts. They wanted their own filet mignon. Don't just let me stab out a portion. I'm going to choose it, and I'm going to cook it the way I want it. And they would force the people to do that, and that was not what they were supposed to be doing. So you have a sacrificial sin, and you have a big bad sin. So that's another link. The sin, in one case that they're doing, in the other case he didn't do, of sleeping with a woman or sleeping with women who are not allowed for them. Okay, in verse, let's just look at 1 Samuel again.
Of course, the consequences are different.
Yeah. Yeah, one doesn't... Well, eventually they die, right? So eventually they get their punishment. And eventually he's exonerated. But at this moment, the guy doing the right thing is in prison, and the guys doing the wrong thing are happily eating steak and sleeping with women.
Yeah, but should one be making that parallel at that point? I mean, that's just taking a moment in the story.
Sure, I'm going
and
to
basically
that
the comeuppance of them both is the judgment or the punishment or whatever you want to call it for their disobedience. Isn't that what you're saying, Danny?
Yeah, they should only be thinking about the rightness and wrongness of it. But, I mean, say for Joseph, you might, there is the added thing that she's connected to some pretty powerful
Right. But I mean, the lesson surely is that you have to hang on to being
this.
You have to hang on to, I don't know, being good, obeying the Lord, irrespective of the consequences. I mean, you don't just give in.
Yeah.
And in the same way, and
this
the Lord will see you through. I mean,
this is the
I'm being a bit banal,
thing.
But it's...
Yeah, he could have been thinking even of the flip. He could have been thinking, oh, maybe if I do this, it'll gain me favor politically somehow.
Who is the he you're talking about?
Joseph.
Joseph.
He could
have
been thinking, yeah.
God has set it up.
Yeah.
So looking at it through a wisdom perspective, I think this is a big theme in this story.
The eyes of men or the eyes of God.
Yeah. Eyes of men and the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Like a good person has both to their credit. And here it's pointed out several times that all the people are saying bad things about it. So it's not just that you're sinning against God, you're also sinning in everybody else's eyes.
There's another link between 39 Genesis and 1 Samuel 2. And in both cases, this wasn't a one-time affair. In 39,
it's a continual,
it's specifically says,
right,
day by day, and he did not
exactly
listen. And with Eli, it says,
Veshama. Right. And I tried to point that out, but I didn't actually specifically say it here. But there were things that he kept hearing about. And
so this wasn't, it wasn't just like he messed up on a, wasn't quite sure what he heard. He was,
yeah,
it was repeated enough so that,
there's,
so that he became complicit.
There's another little,
Veshama denotes that this was a continual thing.
Yes.
That's biblical Hebrew, yeah, as opposed to a modern.
It doesn't say Vaishma, like, and he heard it.
He heard it.
Like, that's the next event in the story. You see it completely. It says Veshama, and he was hearing it.
Right.
It's in verse
22.
The Eli meod veshama et kol asher ya'asun banav lechol Israel ve'et asher yishkevun et anashim atzovot petach ol moed.
My English says, and he heard everything he saw. So how would you say, instead of it saying English, and he heard everything, what would you write? You would say, and he was hearing, or he used to hear, or he would hear, something that implies the
kept
repetition.
It's interesting because in the net, they kept the aspect of the following what his sons were doing, but they kind of minimize it for Eli. They say, now Eli was very old when he heard about everything that his sons used to do to all the people of Israel and how they used to have sex with the women who were stationed at the entrance to the tent of meeting.
That's the opposite of what your father's saying.
Well, they...
No.
Now Eli was very old when he heard. It's kind of... They're acknowledging there's some kind of break there, but they're not... They didn't put
well,
in he used to hear.
They used to do this. They were doing it. I was.
Yes. No, but she's saying specifically Ellie's hearing. It doesn't have used to. He used to hear. It just says now
they
he.
Dropped that out of the
exactly.
Time.
They, or they minimized it.
I think it's important
it.
What you're saying because it's like he kept on, you know, I don't care how old he was. The fact is he keeps on hearing these stories. Did you know they're doing this? And did you know they're doing that? And somebody else comes along and says they're doing such and such.
And it says in verse 23, from all the Am, from all the people, or all these people. He may have had individual witnesses. And then he says, don't, my sons, because this Shmu'ah, this report that I am hearing, and then, then it has this curious phrase. I'm glad we have a bunch of experts here. It's pointed in the empty, Ma'avirim Am Adonai. So the people, at the end of verse 24, there's a report that the people are passing around. The people of God are passing around. But in Greek, me puite utos, oti uk agathe e akue, asero akuo. Right, so far so good. To me dulevin laon theo, not to serve the people of God. And I don't know exactly what they're doing, but if you read the Resh Adaled, you get Avadim or Ma'avidim. Maybe they're enslaving or they're not serving like an Eved, they're doing something opposite. It seems to me that that's what the Greek is reading.
I have to confess I'm lost.
Okay.
I'm lost in what you're saying.
There's one word in verse 24 that is kind of curious.
It's a little strange because you would normally expect it to have a subject, and if you take the thing that's there that could be the object and you make it the subject, then the subject is singular shaped, but the verb is plural shaped.
Did that clarify things for you?
Everything about that little clause is curious.
So basically,
there's lots of ways to read it.
Yeah.
What she's saying, and the Septuagint people actually read it as if a fly had stepped in the ink.
if the fly stepped in the ink there, then that gives you another connection to our passage with Yosef, because he is an Eved. He's a slave, right? In Egypt. Oh, for sure. I think the main thing is a contrast.
But towards the end of this passage, it talks about that you raise up a
Kohen Ne'eman.
A Kohen that they will come and bow down to you and roast the bread. This is what happened with Yosef Aaron anyhow.
Okay. So you could say in that way, Joseph would be paralleling Samuel. But both Joseph and Samuel then would be character foils to Eli's sons, who are not the faithful
right.
priests.
Right.
And they're doing everything wrong, and they're not serving the people,
or
there's false reports or bad reports about them.
Or he doesn't have to be Samuel, he can just be the opposite of Eli's sons. But I do think you're right, though, that you know the Meshachet of the Kohanim, the priests that serve, is also the term that's used for Joseph in what he does with Potiphar and Pharaoh.
Yeah, so, he is a Meshachet.
So there is a play on that between, again, like he's like a priest.
And again, Eli says, if you sin against another person, God might intervene on your behalf. If you sin against God, who's going to pray for you? Who's going to intervene? Who's
so
going to be
this
the
word
Mishoret?
What word is Mishoret?
That was actually referring back to the theme. There is no word Mishoret. Wait, there is earlier. We read it in last parasha.
Okay.
The beginning of this chapter in Genesis. But in our section here, we haven't had it. But the theme is there. And if we're talking about this difficult little passage at the end of verse 24, according to the Greek, the problem with Eli's sons is they're not serving the people of God. That's what it says. They're not serving the people of God. And so there's that contrast then between proper service, serving the people, and improper. Again, you have a sin, a het, against God. Joseph says, I can't do this thing because I would be sinning against, obviously, my master, but also against God. And then that is contrasting, or that's the other side of this coin, where the wise person is good in the eyes of men and God, or has a good name in favor with men and God. And then here in Samuel, Eli says it the other way. Don't you know if you sin against someone else, maybe God could forgive you or intervene. But if you sin against God, like, you're really in for it. Who's going to save you? So,
don't you think that's the key, the crux of this whole thing? Is sinning against God?
Sinning against God, sure.
I mean, for the language.
Yeah. For the link?
Yeah, the language. Yeah, the link.
Yeah, because we have Het L'Adonai here, and we have Het L'Elohim, which is a key link.
Are you going to comment on the end of that next verse that you went into?
That God wanted to kill them? Would you like to comment about that?
After you.
No, please. age before
youth.
That's not
your
old.
I know, but I can't.
Have you turned 66 yet?
No.
Uh-oh.
Oh, so okay. You're
the oldest. Go ahead, Abba.
All right, I am older then.
So his comment is about, how do you understand because God wanted to kill them?
Well, in English, when we say because, we like to go into direct causing. So if you put that into English, they didn't listen to their father's words because God wanted to kill them. It makes it sound like God was forcing them, in English, God
okay.
was forcing them
yeah.
not to listen. Whereas key is a word, this connection here isn't like the English because. It has a very, very about it. You know, think about it. God wanted to kill them. And if you think about it, God wanted to kill them. He wanted to kill them because they were not listening to their father's advice. It actually ends up opposite if you think about it.
It's not that he wanted them not to listen so he could kill them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an important
point. And in fact,
point.
There are times when the same word is also used even like indeed. In this case, you know, this was so evil that God wanted to kill them. So it is arresting, even in Hebrew when you see it, because many times it will give, like the English, it will give the direct reason, but not always. And so it does arrest you, and you start thinking, and, you know, he hafetz Adonai lahamitam.
So consider it.
And you realize that it's more of a distant causation.
Right. And the narrator's trying to help you.
God was not forcing these people not to listen, but he was enforcing his commands to blot out evil. That what these people were doing was, in a sense, another way to read that verse earlier would be enslaving the people if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their evil was literally ruining the people. I wonder if we can change Monty Lehman into some word for...
Well, we'll let you think about that.
Is the sense sort of like this? Nevertheless, they did not keep the voice of the Lord. Imagine, it was so bad, the Lord desired to kill them.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Kind of like that?
I was arguing that is a possible reading. But you get to that on your second thought. The very, very first thought, it's arresting, and then you get to that thought.
Is it more of a consequence? I mean, God is saying, thou shalt not, whatever the thou shalt nots are. Man doesn't obey, and it's not that God comes along and says, right, you're dead, but there are consequences. I mean, I get very confused with consequence, judgment, and so on, but it seems that if you go on disobeying the parent, sleeping around, abusing sacrifices and offerings in the way that they are. There are consequences.
Right, and there are judgments.
What?
And there are judgments.
And there are judgments. And I mean, is that the key rather than because in the direct sense? Which,
right, he's saying that because in the direct sense is probably
you're saying
it doesn't have to be a threat.
I'm saying that it can be rather indirect linkage.
Yeah, I think that
there are oodles of places in the Hebrew Bible.
And there's evidence two
where
verses
you have
later.
To think through to get exactly what the relationship is.
I think it's even though the two stories are some of the principles there are quite similar, I believe that God is showing a comprehensive and dynamic administration of his law and showing that he can do all things with administration of his law.
Okay. For one, in the next verse, in verse 26, we have again that Samuel was growing up finding favor both with the Lord and with people. And I think that's another thing. I put the Proverbs here, but we have that statement about Joseph. If you guys want to find it, it's in there too, in Genesis 39. And so again, you have the right way to be, wrong way to be, kind of contrast.
The other thing just occurs to me is Shmuel's name, which is also to do with hearing, and God hears. And
well, not exactly. There's no ayin. It's not Shema'el.
And there's also the aspect that these people are in a position of authority. They're supposed to be leading the people in their abuse.
Exactly.
They're abusing their authority.
Exactly, which is what our friend here is saying, that God sets administrators in place and holds them accountable, and he's...
Yeah, the moral of both stories is summed up at the end of verse 30, verse Samuel 2.
I will honor. Exactly.
And so that's both
Yeah.
The same actions.
He who honors me, I will honor. He who despises me, I will make light of or dishonor.
And is it the same word just before?
Shame.
Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves?
Yes.
It's the same word.
And it is. And there are plays going on there. We remember Eli is a very fat man, right? That's what kills him. He's sitting in a chair and goes backwards and breaks his neck because he's fat. And they've been getting fat because they've been eating steaks all the time.
Ooh.
Right?
Not vegan.
And which has been against
so
the,
much for
the directions.
Diet.
they probably had a little pita with it. But the language, when God talks about what the sons are doing, he uses language reminiscent of offering, like animals for offering. He talks about kicking, like it's the fat calves that kick, right? But it's also a sign of rebellion. You're kicking. And he talks about, and then there's a contrast with Samuel. If you look at verse 26, and the youth or the servant Samuel was getting bigger and bigger and good, right? Sometimes, you know, Rach Vatov is for an offering. This is Gadel Vatov, with God and with people. But further down, let me show you where God says, you know, isn't it enough? I chose you and your father's clan to serve before me. Verse 29, why did you kick against my offerings that I commanded? And you honored your sons. So the play that I see, lechabed is to honor, but kaved is heavy. So if you read this, to make your sons heavy, like by honoring them, by giving into them, you've allowed them to get fat off my offerings.
What verse?
In verse 29. And then it follows that thought, lehavriachem, to make you all bari. And if we have other context, bari means you've got flesh on you. Right? You're healthy. You've got a little extra. To get fat off the first fruits of my offering. And so there's little interesting plays in there.
Huh. Kind of like you thought you were doing well by them, but you,
yeah,
all this goodness you supposedly put on them killed them. Like,
right.
Smothering them.
By honoring them and by letting them get fat, basically.
Spoiled and rotten.
You're going to make them thin. You're going to make them lightweight in spiritually because they are despising me, and so they're going to be shamed or they're going to be made light. So you have this contrast between honor, shame, heavy, light.
Makes you think of Joseph and his dream of the cows.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Okay, there's another little connection I was thinking about. God says through this prophet sent to Eli to confront him about his sons, you know, don't you know that I revealed myself to your clan in Egypt? So I was asking myself, who is Eli's clan? And so I don't think we have it said for us, but if we follow the word links, I mean, if we assume he's a Levite, he is Aaron's clan, right?
Where are you?
In the prophet's words to Eli about his son. How they've been doing the wrong things. He starts it off, he says, didn't I reveal myself to your father's clan? When they were in Egypt, belonging to the house of Pharaoh. So then I was thinking, well, that's an interesting connection, because here we have Joseph, who is a slave belonging to the house of Pharaoh. Pharaoh's minister, one of his ministers. You could say that everybody eventually was enslaved. All the clans of Israel were enslaved. So what revelation does this refer to in Egypt? And that's a good question. Later sages connected it to Ezekiel 20. 4 verses in Ezekiel 25 and continuing. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. On the day I chose Israel, I swore to the descendants of the house of Jacob and made myself known to them in the land of Egypt. I swore to them, I am the Lord your God. On that day I swore to bring them out of the land of Egypt to a land which I had picked out for them, a land flowing with milk and honey, the most beautiful of all lands.
Ezekiel
20, verse 5 until verse 8 or so. I said to them, each of you must get rid of the detestable idols you keep before you, and do not defile yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So again, this is all just how do we understand when God confronts Eli, he says, I gave a revelation of myself in Egypt. Which revelation is he talking about? Do we have it? Or who was it given to? Who is Eli's house? Is he a priest from Levi? If you look at Deuteronomy 18:5, Ki bo bachar Adonai Elohecha mikol shvatecha la'amod lesheret b'shem Adonai. Hu uvanav. Okay. So this is the Levite clan is chosen. And it says that God chose them out of all the tribes to stand or to serve him all the days. So presumably Eli could be from Levi. And that's why he's a priest. I'm still not sure what the revelation is. Did Aaron have a revelation? Or is it just talking about the whole story? Anyone else have an idea? Yeah, when God tells Eli, I revealed myself. I surely revealed myself to your clan. What exactly is he talking about? He's talking about it happening in Egypt. Right. Well, that was an interesting connection to me because there's this revelation, but Joseph isn't a Levite.
Right, but that's not the point.
Okay.
Right. Like, you know, Joseph, Jacob had dreams. He had many dreams. So, there was a lot of revelation going on.
Didn't Moses also throw it on the snake in front of the Israelites as a proof that God had sent him back to Israel?
Yes, yeah.
So,
in that sense, a revelation. Mm-hmm.
You see, revealed doesn't necessarily mean it's a dream.
No.
Did I not clearly reveal myself to
it could
your
be
ancestors
a sign,
when
it
they
could
were
be a
in
word.
Egypt? It could be the snake, it could be crossing the Red Sea, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I showed you who I was,
but
you and the whole clan, the
mm-hmm.
whole...
But
the
specifically
whole
to your clan, right? Or
yeah. Ebet Avicha. The house of your
not,
father.
Not just
right.
What?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Is this referring to Revelation to Moses in general?
We're talking about Am Israel. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it's something more specific.
Yeah, but maybe it's just Eli's clan because you know when you start to go.
Which are Levites?
Well, yeah, but there's specific like you know you've got later on. Merari,
all of that.
Yeah,
Aaron's sons.
You know, the high priest.
Right, right.
Saul, David, so on.
Right. Because it seems like this story in Samuel is going to take out his clan from being chosen.
Because what happens next?
Samuel gets put in place.
Faithful. but his sons are just like Oni's sons, right? They also are bad.
Yeah, but is Samuel a Levite, by the way?
He's from Ephraim, right?
He's from Ephraim, and it also says Ephrati.
Wait, who is Ephraim from?
Ephraim is from Yosef.
Okay, so there's your connection.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's strange that the faithful priest ends up coming from a non-Levitic priest.
From Joseph.
And then if we assume Eli was a normal priest and Levite, his sons were not faithful. It's interesting.
It's two priesthoods.
There are more than two priesthoods.
There's many more than that too.
But in this passage, God says he'll set up his faithful priest that will go before his anointed one. Which I guess we can assume to be Saul.
Like the Hasmoneans, that was a big issue with them. Like, who were they? Where did they come from?
Right.
They're from Levi, but what gave them, they're not from
Levi.
The point is, faithful is as faithful does. God makes a promise to people, but if they continually break it,
right,
then they can break that agreement. Like, he comes to Eli, he sends a prophet, later he sends Samuel, and still there's nothing that changes,
right,
and so in the end they die on the same day.
Right.
So although he had chosen his family, in the end he unchooses them, and he sets up someone else who turns out to be Samuel, who is good with God and people.
So, just, I have the list here. It goes from Eli's plan, then it goes to Itamar,
mm-hmm,
and then mm-hmm, there's Abitai, right? Like, he's deposed, and then comes Sadok is the next, and then you go into the time of the exile, and then it gets more complicated.
Right. But Sadok was like the last.
You've got two types of priests.
Yeah,
you've got one that is done through genealogy and made with an oath, and one where the priest doesn't make an oath because God has
chosen him. So we have up here the comment, if you didn't hear, there's two kinds of priests. That one is through genealogy from an oath with God, and the other is chosen by God. There's no accompanying oath. We've talked about this in the context of anointing. When do you anoint a king? Not when it's obvious to everybody who the king is. When it's not obvious.
So now you want to talk about Melchizedek, you're
basically. Melchizedek. We have these priests who are not Levites on occasion.
So I'm thinking of Levi and Judah, because Jesus wasn't even from a Levitical priesthood.
Right, Jesus was not from Levitical priesthood.
Yeah, exactly, but he ministered on behalf of them.
Unless you want to see some kind of married connection to Elizabeth.
God chooses and raises up.
God chooses and raises up a person. That's true.
It's more of a righteous spiritual judgment as opposed to a fleshly Levitical genealogy. A righteous judgment is spiritual and not in the flesh, is it?
Okay, but that can be true always. Okay. So for me, the big thing goes back to this verse in Proverbs. What we're all shooting for. And obviously we don't do it in our own power, because it specifically says in the Joseph story that God gives favor, Joseph's favor, in the eyes of all these people. But we strive to have a good standing, both with people and with God. And the people that are exemplary seem to have that. We have Joseph in this story, and we have Samuel in this story. And they're both precocious. Maybe they acted like know-it-alls at times, but...
What about Psalm 51?
Psalm 51? Which part about it?
Against you, God, only have I
sinned. Right. That confuses me. Why the sin is only against God, if you take it to be about David and Bathsheba. To me, the sin is against Uriah and God. Again, a sin against God and men. And here, the evil things people are complaining about it, and he's saying, God, you're singing against God and men. I don't know. I don't know why there it's only God.
Joseph's story is kind of like the antithesis of like seeking almost of the Proverbs 3-4 about to seek favor among God and people. Like, he doesn't seem to be politically astute. The way he operates in his life constantly is like not politically astute, like
right.
Revealing his dreams to his brothers. He's
right.
like that's just stupid. You know, like, okay, if that's the truth of what you saw, maybe you want to be smarter about how you do it. And it's like you said, like, God's going to do it in the end anyway. Like, Potiphar's wife coming on him, and like, what are you going to do there? Like, there's just no, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
He's going to prison.
He's from House Stark.
He's what?
Could have grabbed his clothes.
Well, this kind of reminds you of when it says about Jesus growing up, that he increased
in favor
and in favor with
God and men. And there are other people. Is it, help me out here, is it Mordecai? Grew big with God and men?
No, because God's
or
not
Daniel?
Mentioned.
No, it can't be God.
No,
yeah, you're right.
Mordecai.
But he did grow big.
Is it Samuel?
No, for sure it's Samuel here, but someone else too? Did Daniel?
Is it maybe Daniel? How about
Solomon?
Maybe Solomon?
I don't know. You could do a whole study just on that, and our time is up. But yeah, I guess Danny's words are, you work on finding favor in God, and then he'll work on you getting favor in the eyes of men. And if you get thrown in jail in the process, he's still going to get you that favor at some point.
Yes, which happens to Daniel, of course.
Yeah.
Unless you're
the sandwich part.
Anyone else have a final cap up?
I don't know if it's a real red herring.
Oh, well, we can't do red herrings because we don't have time.
Can't I throw it out?
Well, is it going to like.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
It was just what?
Okay, hold on. I paused it.
Press the red button.
Press the red button.